So welcome to the September 23rd, 2013 board meeting. Unfortunately, President Sam Black is unable to preside over tonight's meeting due to a personal emergency, and the board meeting will now come to order. We're going to skip the Pledge of Allegiance until we come back to open session after we go into close. But we do need to do a roll call. So, Mrs. Tucker.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood?
Mr. Elger?
Here.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Black?
We're set. So this is our first night of doing this, so we're going to start out. This will be a little different for everybody. We're going to start out by going into closed session, and we'll only do that for 30 minutes. So what I'd like to do is adjourn the closed session now, and the board has determined that there is a need to adjourn the closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony and a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. Collective negotiating matters between the district and its employee for their representatives or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. May I have a motion to adjourn a closed session?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
So we had a motion by Patrick and a second by Drew. Roll call.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Buczynski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
We're set. So for the people here, what we've done is if you go out in the hallway and turn to the left and then an immediate right, there's a conference room there. You can wait in there for us. For the folks we need in the closed session, we'll do this here. And we'll finish up as expeditiously as we can. Okay, so I'd like to call us back to order for the open session of our board meeting. We started out, what do we have? Will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yep. So welcome, everybody. What we're going to do first in this meeting tonight is we have a little bit of recognition to go through. And I think that, Katie, are you going to handle that? So why don't I turn it over to you and you can go ahead.
Okay. So beginning last year, our ESL 3 course began implementing the research labs of American Reading Company at Hadley. And the course and the program provides project-based learning opportunities for students. It challenges and empowers students to become experts in their chosen topic within a shared unit of study. Students are challenged through grade-level rigor and the use of complex texts, which are based off of the Common Core standards and the state standards of science and social studies. The trimester ends in a final project, which is a student-authored and illustrated book. American Reading Company has a rigorous criteria for the books that they purchase, and have only purchased 25 total, with only 3 of those being middle school students. It's extremely rare for a student book to meet the criteria for purchase, much less 3 student books from the same district. Our 3 students who have been chosen to have published pieces of work by the company will receive a $50 check from the company, have their books added to the company's website, and the company will showcase their books to other school districts across the United States as exemplar student authors' books. So at this time, I'd like to ask Lisa Marquez, who was their teacher last year, and Barbara Schultz from the American Reading Company to join me to give the students their award. Our first student is Adam Ali. And to give you some information about Adam, Adam was born in the United States in Brooklyn, New York. His family moved back to Pakistan when he was only 4 years old. His native language is Urdu. His family moved back to Glendale Heights area, and he began attending Hadley Junior High as an ESL 1 student with minimal English proficiency. He has had great experience in ESL, but said his first year was very difficult. As for the book he wrote, he said that he didn't know anything about NASCAR before he began writing, but he does love cars. He found it to be an interesting topic and enjoyed researching about it. He feels that he had a wonderful experience at Hadley. This school year, he's at Glenbard West, where he hopes to be in the business club. His goal is to get straight A's, and he won't accept anything less than B. He would like to play sports and make a lot of friends, and in the future, he would like to attend college and major in business. His dream is to be a CEO. His interest is in cars and electronics, and one day hopes to open his own car dealership. One of his goals is to try to create a new car that would be built within his company. Congratulations, guys. Our next author is Mary Tule. Mary was born in Burma and attended kindergarten there. When she was 7, she went to Malaysia and lived there for 2 years. She did not attend school in Malaysia, but she was taught by her mother. She came to the United States in 2009 and started at Lincoln School as a third grader. She did not speak English when she arrived. Last year was her first year at Hadley. Her mom helps her with her homework at night, and she also stays after school for help. As for writing the book, she picked natural resources as her topic. She likes the idea of clean water and air and likes the color green. Students voted for the completed book, and her book received the most points by her peers. She loved illustrating her book and typing out the information. This year, Mary's in 7th grade, and her goal is to get a meet in all of her courses. In the future, she wants to be a doctor. She wants to be able to help people here in the United States. She also wants to then go back to Burma and help the people there. One of her dreams is to go to Paris and visit the Eiffel Tower. She would like to thank all of her teachers that have helped her and been so nice to her along the way. Congratulations. And our third author is Jose Hernandez. Jose was born in McAllen, Texas in 1999. His family then moved to Illinois, where he attended school in Addison, Lombard, and Hanover Park. When he was in 4th grade, he moved to Glendale Heights and attended Ben Franklin. He continued to receive ESL services at Hadley Junior High. And last year, he was in ESL 3. He enjoys speaking Spanish and English, and he feels he's good at both. In his ESL 3 class, he learned a lot about the Revolutionary War and found it interesting. He liked learning about the different wars and connected a lot of the information that he was researching in ESL 3 to what he was learning in history. As an 8th grader, he would like to join the Hadley soccer team. His personal goals are to continue getting better grades and to be more involved in school. This accomplishment has shown him that he can do much more than he has done in the past. He's not sure what he wants to do in the future, but he knows now that he wants to go to college. He wants to continue to work hard, and he is proud of what he has accomplished. Congratulations.
Okay. Great job, guys. Great job.
Lisa Marquez for all of her wisdom, support, and encouragement throughout the ESL 3 class, and they all expressed their thanks to her. I would also like to thank these three students for their remarkable examples of our District 41 learner characteristics and truly owning their learning.
And you two rock stars. You try. So, transition out.
Get the next group.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you, guys. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Three books. Wow. Out of one district.
Yeah, so we have plenty of seats.
Diverse backgrounds.
Yeah, making
different
a difference.
Different countries, writing
making
books.
Making a difference. Something, a lot of things working.
Talk to Adam about NASCAR now.
We're going to go right into public.
Do I need to save it on here?
Yep, we'll just roll right in.
Okay.
And Maureen will note it in the minutes.
All right, great. I guess we'll go into our favorite part of the evening here, public participation. And it's John Kenwood joining the meeting at 7:33. For public participation, I'd like to remind members of the audience that while the board provides opportunities for visitors to express their opinions at specific times in the agenda, speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes, including any summary or concluding comments. Personal complaints and criticisms about staff members, students, or other members of District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. This will be more productive towards achieving an effective resolution of the problem and minimizing the risks of breach of confidentiality, invasion of privacy, and defamation claims against both the district and the speaker. Also, profanity, interruption, and other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response. If response is warranted, is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Maureen, you have a sheet?
I do.
Okay. Jeff Cooper, Glen Ellen. Keep my comments brief tonight. First question I have is, the comment is, the BMO MasterCard, the statements that were supposed to be posted on the district website, have not been posted since the month that ended May 20th. So we have the very important. Can you please address that? Thank you. The next comment is on something I've not been able to get an answer on. I'll keep it very general here, so I don't bring up social networks. There is a hotel bill that I brought up to the board previously. You know what that bill is about. Who is it that I talked to get some feedback resolution? You know, where do we go? You came up with these comments about everything should be done, you know, privately. Well, if we do things privately and nobody answers the public's comments or public's questions, what we have is we've quashed the public's nosiness, I guess, for lack of a better word. So I'd like to know who it is that I should talk to about this issue. And lastly, something I've not talked about before, but the parents of the kids in the district talk about this, is on the portable issue, or the portable in the classrooms. I don't understand, as a taxpaying citizen of this district, why an issue that's been talked about for so long hasn't been made the number one priority for the district. If you have the money, build the add-ons that are needed to retire all portables. All labs, et cetera, aren't the number one priority, and they must come in line after the portable issue has been handled. That just
is too simple. I hope you guys will listen to what I said. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else that would like to address the board with public participation?
I'll pass until the end of the meeting.
The end of the meeting. Okay. Terrific. Thank you. Move on to action items, the consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda or to be considered separately? Anyone? Okay. Hearing none, we have a motion to approve the reports and recommendations contained in the consent agenda, including human resources, finance, facilities, and operations, and other matters which include approval of board meeting minutes of September 9th and September of the regular meeting and the closed session meeting.
Motion. Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Kuchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kemmler?
Yes. All right, terrific. Superintendent recommendations. Resolution to transfer funds from the Education Fund to the Debt Service Fund. At its September 9, 2013 regular meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to adopt a resolution transferring money from the Ed Fund to the Debt Service Fund in the amount not to exceed $318,000 on or before the October 15th board meeting. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Discussion?
I think we talked about it at the last meeting. I think we were all fine with it.
Thank you. Hearing none, roll call.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Kuchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, terrific. Superintendent's report. Paul?
So we have a... I'm just trying to thumb down here. Sorry. Just wanted to make everybody aware of the change to the parent-teacher conference. We made this change to really support our parents. One of the things the community was asking for was to ensure that there were more evening sessions than sessions during the day. We were able to accommodate that and ensure that we had one additional evening session. The schedule now is Wednesday, November 6th, a full day of student attendance plus evening parent-teacher conferences between 5 and 8:30. Thursday, November 7th, no student attendance, parent-teacher conferences from 1 to 8:30. Friday, November 8th, no student attendance, and shortened work day for teacher-parent conferences from 8:30 to noon. So that change will be reflected in any calendars and that our schools will be putting those pieces out to our parents if they have not already.
Paul, we're still using the sign-up system that started a few years ago where parents can go in and plug in their times.
I believe so, but I'm going to have to defer to Karen.
Yeah. Same system.
It'll be through Skyward, right. And so all Hadley and the elementary will be using the same
program. Oh, good.
So we think that was a real positive change to meet the community's needs and our parents' needs. Last week, Sam and I met with... I apologize.
Any questions, anybody? Or no? I had one.
Please.
So this was done to accommodate parents. That's great. Did we lose teaching time or student time? Or
no.
It's all...
Everything was the same. We didn't... Yeah, everything was exactly the same from a teacher standpoint, or a student standpoint,
student,
I should say.
Yeah, not teacher.
I apologize.
Student, yeah.
Student standpoint.
Okay. All right. Terrific.
Good question.
That was my question.
Last week, Sam and I met with President Reichen and Vice President Dale Kemp for about an hour regarding Wheaton College. President Reichen is obviously the president of Wheaton College. We discussed two main items. The Wheaton College East Campus property, the board gave myself and staff direction to go out, have these conversations. As one board member put it, we need to close the loop on this conversation. Where are we at? President Reichen and Vice President Kemp were fantastic to meet with. It was a great opportunity, one, for me to get to know both the individuals. We did discuss the East Campus property. In their view, that is a very important piece of property that is part of their portfolio. Their board, as President Reichen described it to me, was they're a board that looks 15, 20 years down the road, and they want to ensure that Wheaton College can expand if need be and be able to use that property. They did talk about the cost for that land, that they are not totally against selling that property. However, the price that was offered by the district last year, they do not believe was fair market value. We did not discuss what they believe fair market value was, but that the offer that was made, it would not be accepted, nor would the president bring that offer to his board at this time. Vice President Kemp was more cautious, saying that he truly believed that that's an important property for the college and that he personally could not see the college selling that property in the short term. Because they, like all other institutions, are working on a long-range plan. And how does that property fit into it? They also recognize there's a limit, there's a very limited amount of property in this area. And they do not want to sell the property in the short term and then need it later on. So although they want to continue having conversations with us about that, they believe that the price would probably be in the $20 to $25 million range. Again, very cautious even with those numbers as they were talking this through. We did talk about partnership. The partnership around their East Campus, partnership around their student teaching college. They have a very formidable student teaching part of their campus. And we were looking at how could we partner with them in that area, especially related to the STEM fields. How could that partnership look? So we'll continue to have those conversations. How do we continue to partner around student teaching, the practicums, having more of their students in our schools, and opening up. President Reichen also wants us to engage with their department chairs over the type of education we know teachers need as they enter into this field. What is it we're looking for from young teachers? And it's critical that both the university level, university and college level, and the schools are having those conversations about what it is to meet the needs of our kids. It really was a fantastic conversation. Appreciated both the gentlemen. It was an open, honest conversation. Nothing was off the table. We spoke for roughly an hour, answering questions back and forth. Questions, comments, concerns?
I guess I just want to make sure that I have this right, because this is consistent with what we heard before, that they were not against selling the property, but that they had a price tag on it without any appraisal that they submitted to us. And that is what they reaffirmed, I guess.
Correct. And I want to reiterate where Vice President Kemp was at. He does not believe the board president specifically would be interested in selling the property at this time, quite honestly, for any amount of money. But that was his view, yeah, and one person on a board's view, yeah, of that property. They recognize how valuable that property is to them and to maybe others.
And I think the last time we had conversations with them, obviously they're in their long-range plan, but yeah, I didn't, from what I heard, and Erica, maybe you can refresh your mind because you met with them, but I didn't recall that property was a part of their long-range plan, or was it? Or they didn't know how they were going to use it.
The plan that Vice President Kemp spoke about was a plan that was kind of I'm going to call it blue sky thinking, but kind of a green plan, like what might we do with the property. And so I think it's consistent with what you've heard, that there's a desire to look currently, but be cautious around making decisions that could impact them down the road. And that seems to be what you heard as well.
So pretty much not going anywhere?
I do not believe on that property, unless District 41 would entertain increasing their offer substantially.
I think we have a second next step then, and I think we all know what that is, and that is to go back to the resolution that was tabled so we can close that out.
Yes. And that was one of the issues that Sam brought to them. Part of the closing loop was putting some closing touches on that resolution.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The salary compensation report, it will be on our website tomorrow. You have it in front of you. I think most people do. I see Erica with it, and I see John. So that salary compensation report is there. Like I said, it will be available to the public. It will be posted on our website tomorrow morning.
This is on the link, the finance link that we have, so we kind of hover over it and it pops information or mm-hmm. a separate link.
Transparency.
It's a part of the transparency project. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. I am going to finish there with my report. So I'll hand it back over to you.
This compensation report, do we feel, as you have put the data out there, should we have a summary or some key, I don't know if it would help the community to have some key statistics around years of service, average salary, or something besides raw data so that we're not all trying to interpret what this means or doesn't mean. That maybe mm-hmm. not for now, but it's a thought.
It's something that I can look at.
You know, when you hand people a whole bunch of data, that's great, but maybe there's some summary or key points that we'd want to take out or show a trend from year to year mm-hmm. so people can see what's going on.
Or how it aligns with the other districts. Cause I know that we
And it would help us too we look at numbers, but
no, that's good. We'll look into that, see what other data points we can add to that report.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or concerns with the report?
All right, moving on. Board reports. Any board committee reports? Anyone?
I attended Hadley for Dean, I think, right? Yeah, you're welcome. No, it was a good meeting. PTA meeting was last week. It was on September 10th. Was it last week, September 10th, or the week before?
A week before.
And Lori Taylor is the current president. This is her second year as president at Hadley PTA. New principal Steve Dively and also assistant principal Gina attended the meeting as well, which was helpful because they provided some insight. Essentially, the meeting was a review of the startup. Lori Taylor, President Melissa Power, Vice President Kristen Matchy is Secretary, and Jody Baltimore is Treasurer this year. They voted on their budget proposal and also the budget proposal for the Theater Arts Program, which was voted on separately because it's a separate addendum to the budget, and so it's an amount of money from Hadley that is kind of seeded because they have to start the process of their theater project now. And the dates for the show are March 14th and 15th, 2014. So that was all approved. Their large fundraiser, Magazine Madness, that we probably most of us are familiar with, is kicking off. And kudos to Laura Phillips, who coordinated all of the startup activity. I know we talked a little bit about that at the beginning of the year, but Steve Dively, the new principal, talked specifically about that and how seamless that process was. So There was just great feedback about that. And she's doing a kind of a feedback loop on kind of things that they want to make sure that they're building for next year. So it was really well done. Meeting adjourned at 8:55. And it was a good meeting. I told them that you would be back.
I will. On September 17th, I went to the Churchill PTA. Before that meeting started, the PTA president, Ms. Vogel, gave a really good presentation for new families. And as a new board member, it was great to see that because I got to know a lot about Churchill and new families. So she did a really great job as a PowerPoint slideshow in detail and depth. It was really good. We had it in their library, and there had to be over 30-something people there, so they really had a good attendance to their first PTA meeting. They also went over the budget, reviewed it, and approved it, and discussed it, not as detailed as we do in finance, but it was pretty good. Pretty
I
great.
Assume you had your usual questions.
I was holding back.
Then you'd get the whole Joe experience.
No, yeah.
Next time.
Not the full Joe. But I wrote a bunch of numbers down for you guys later. The one thing that was interesting, as everyone knows, we now serve breakfast at Churchill.
Yeah.
They have 110 students who, on average, have taken it at the beginning of the year, which does include some pay students. That compares to about 220 students who have a hot lunch. So I thought those numbers were pretty interesting for your program that we have instituted at Churchill. So that was a very good meeting. Mine was a very long one. I was in the week from the hour or so.
So mine wasn't as long, and I think I got the cream of the crop because I went to a meeting on September 19th, which was the Forest Glen Pre-K Ice Cream Social. I got ice cream and no budget. But I do want to say that during this meeting, the energy that was there was fantastic. Right from when you first walk in and the logistics of how to organize all this, they had 168 family members there. So there were moms and dads and kids and sometimes siblings and sometimes grandparents. But there was a real community feel to it. And it was a great way to start off the year. And if I may, I just want to say, in addition to all the people, there were 12 people from your staff who participated. I want to go through those really quick. It was Stacey Onak, Megan Kazora, Jean Nels, Judy Leska, Maggie Belpedio, Jill Marshall, Grace Saffin, Paula Costello, Allie McDonald, Megan Jarvis, Mary Stecker, and Brenda Clem. And Brenda was good enough to put a lot of this information together for me afterwards. But I just want to say that, this is the really great part about being a member of a board is to go out and see what everybody else is doing and see all the extra effort that people in this district put in that sure showed at this event. It was a great event. So.
That is wonderful.
So I went to the Forest Glen PTA, and they said how successful that was.
Did they give you ice cream?
No, they passed out lollipops. Again, this must have been the finance week or the finance budget week because they went through the same process at Forest Glen, trying to get everything in order and new members. They not only Ice Cream Social, but the Market Days was very successful for them as it relates to a fundraising program. But a lot of the PTA was trying to get involvement from the parents and trying to get more people because what they're seeing is maybe less than 15% of the parents are joining the PTAs or families of PTAs, so they're really trying to look for better ways to get the message out and to get people join. One other thing, I unfortunately left my notes somewhere else at home, but I wanted to possibly speak to Bob or Paul, but I don't know how it worked, but they're trying to raise money for a front of the lawn display, I guess, that a lot of the schools have, mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's a PTA? Capital thing?
Like a sign?
Yeah, like a sign.
Yeah. That's been going on for decades.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay. So I didn't say I was going to bring it up, but I wanted to at least have mm-hmm. a quick chat and say, wait, what? I mean, that's something that we can probably help offset instead of them funding 100% of that. But
So I'll drop a note to
okay.
Paul.
Okay, that sounds great.
We can do about it. But again, budget and finance and all my problems.
Do they not have a sign, or their sign is?
They don't have one.
They don't have one at all. Mm-hmm.
They have a sign for the school, which is on
yeah,
the
right
here.
Yeah, right
they
up
don't
here.
Have like a
information sign. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Drew?
I was at PTA Council this morning. Kirsten was the first time as president. Did an excellent job. It was a really good, actually very good meeting. Kind of getting everybody set up for the year. It worked out very, very well. A lot of really good energy in the room. A lot of energy and a lot of very positive efforts by everyone. So it was a good meeting. Then right before the board meeting, I was at the finance committee meeting. Really the only thing that we talked about is the elementary school facility planning capital projects, which will be discussed later in this meeting.
I'll give a report for Sam, the CIT report, since Sam's not here and I sit on that same team with him. Team 21 met their obligations through the contract, brought forward a recommendation, very thorough recommendation, with many alternative proposals within it, considerations, I should say, not alternative, but considerations. That was brought forward to the continuous improvement team. Continuous improvement team had a number of questions for Team 21. We thanked Team 21 for their time and their efforts. CIT then met as a collective group, and one of the things that we talked about was that this team needed a full day to come together to really think through all of the recommendations that were brought forward, and where does CIT take this? CIT's responsibility is to bring forward a recommendation that could be a vast majority of Team 21's current work. It could be a slight change to it, or it could be a totally different model that we bring forward to the board. And the process really is working, because it was about allowing different groups to have different perspectives on this very tough issue around time and how do we use time within our school day and school year. So CIT will be grappling with that over the course of the next month or so, and then we will be bringing forward to the Board of Education our own recommendation. I think that would kind of summarize where we're at with CIT.
So, Sam is sorry.
Give me a.
No, so Sam is our voice for what our expectations were out of that, I guess. Is that fair to say, or do we need to have a discussion around the options?
Yes. So Sam is a one board member voice there. We will then bring that back to the board, and that's where the board, as this new board as constituted, will give me recommendation to my staff as to the next direction.
So
because ultimately it has to be a negotiated.
Yeah, but we will have a discussion around the options.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And what we like and don't like before you come back with a recommendation.
Correct. Correct.
Good.
I missed the.
I'm sorry. Paul? Did I hear that right? John said we're going to have an opportunity to see, I'll say, a pre-draft of the recommendations, and then
of the options,
and then you'll see
CIT's recommendations. There'll be CIT's recommendations to you, but then it's off to the board. As I said, it's one more perspective. Now,
right.
Ultimately, the board can say we don't care for any of these recommendations, and this is where we're going. You can modify it. It's just like every other team's had that opportunity
okay.
to make those. Those
so
tweaks,
the
or
first time we'll see it is what the CIT recommendation.
Correct, are. Correct, and I'll bring that to you.
And is there a timeline that we have to?
Yes, there is. It's in the contract. We have to bring it to you in December, and I cannot think of the exact date, but I think it's the first board meeting in December. Mm-hmm.
So we'll discuss it before December, but and then we have to decide by, do you remember when? Or
then we move into, it really is about ensuring that we can have time for the negotiation teams to be able to have that in place and to be able to hopefully put it in place for the following school year. But the board may also choose to say next year is not an option. That really will be a full board discussion.
And Paul, just for my own clarification, part of the reason that Sam is on that committee is because he was on the original negotiating committee.
No, he's the board president. Yeah. Per contract, the board president sits on CIT.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the teacher's contract and you see the MOU, all the dates are in there, and that's what this is aligned to. So we're following the contract.
Yes.
Okay. So we're done with that?
Yeah. I just have one other quick report. Supplemental pay. Some of you know I serve on that, and I had also mentioned to Sam that this coming year, so starting in the summertime, I'm going to ask somebody to serve with me so I can start to transition somebody into that committee as well. We met on September 17th. And Supplemental Pay Committee is the committee that looks at basically activities and recommendations are brought to the board. So it's anything that has to do with sports or ambassadors at the elementary schools, any of those kind of extracurricular activities. On September 23rd, so today, there was an email that was sent out to all the teachers with the application for proposals. So it's an annual event, and then the committee will meet again in October to review the proposals and to also see what we might present to the board to accept. The one thing I want to mention about supplemental pay that I think gets lost is that it's an ongoing committee, and some of the work that's done that I think is great is this review of activities and making sure that we're providing parity among certainly the schools, but also at Hadley where kids need to do different things. So a great meeting, and we'll be back in October with recommendations.
Erica, I apologize. Do you know how big the supplemental pay is to the overall salary?
It's I don't have the number in front of me. What happens is we group by student contact hours.
Yeah.
So each of the kind of the rating for the activity is really proposed from the teacher to us, and then we ask questions to make sure that it's true student contact. So it may go up in contact hours or down. The budget itself, I don't have it in front of me, but I can email it to you because we looked at that this week too. I didn't bring my finder or last week. I know that we added some dollars because we sunsetted a group of one activity in particular. But Lori's not here to give you the number, but she oversees that piece as well.
It's about $125,000 of the
$28 million.
Total,
right?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Good question. So we'll keep you posted.
Anything else?
Yeah, there's one more. And I guess it was Drew, Patrick, Erica, Joe, myself, and Dr. Gordon all attended the Glenbard Combined District Board meeting. So it was a very unique experience in that there were 7 school boards there, if you count the Glenbard School Board and all the feeder boards that go into it. And also CASE was represented. So it was a very good opportunity for us to see some of the work that started back, I think the last meeting was in 2007. So it's been a long time since there's been a meeting like this. But one of the things that I thought was very impressive about it is that we're one of the few districts in the state that actually coordinate curriculum and started doing this a very long time ago. So we regularly feed into Glenbard. Glenbard comes back to us and says, this is what we need. You're doing really well in this area. You need to beef it up a little bit in this area. And we work with them to decide what that curriculum is going to be. So it was a great meeting, a lot of participation in the room. Got a few different board reports from them on different things that they're doing. And it looked to be a very worthwhile event. I don't know if anybody else who attended wanted to say anything.
Just good insight. We talk a lot about special education. It was good to hear Jim Nelson give a report. He handed out and I have a couple extra copies, but a summary of all the programs and services. So I thought that was helpful. And just great information. I'm glad that they have.
Terrific. Anyone else?
Just really quickly, everybody got their IASB report to membership, and our, in collaboration with Naperville 203, resolution is listed in here. So once I get the summary, I will put together, like Sam did last year, a summary for the board on, you know, agree or disagree, and then we can have that discussion. But it's good to see that it's in there, so we'll see where it goes.
Fantastic. Anything else? All right, terrific. Discussion items.
Yeah, okay, we'll start the evening with the first phase of our reducing our reliance on portables. Tonight we'll be bringing forward a discussion specifically around the addition of 16 new classrooms to our district in response to one of the questions that Mr. Cooper asked or presented. We are taking that priority of looking at reducing our reliance on our portables. That is a priority that we're bringing forward to our board. Bob will be going through a detailed conversation with you. Please stop him at any point if you have any questions regarding this. We've spent countless hours on this to date. We're excited about it. We believe this is a great first step in this plan. Again, phase one of a three-phase plan. Tonight, Bob will discuss these additional classrooms.
So, thank you. As Paul indicated in his superintendent's report dated September 9th, he had indicated that the administration more or less shifted its thinking from the creation of innovation labs at the elementary schools to, again, reduce the district's reliance upon portables. On your first page of your board report, there's a listing there that indicates the number of portables in each building, the location number, when it was installed, whether it's leased or owned, the date of installation, and the expected replacement date. Currently, the district has 32 portables spread across all of our buildings. We have 10 at Hadley, and then varying number of classrooms at each of the elementary schools. I did want to draw attention down on the table that's been inserted in there under Forest Glen South, two portables. That portable was actually installed in 2002, not 2005. So we have spent countless hours reviewing this proposal really since Paul came on board in July, and we decided to shift our thinking in terms of reducing our reliance, as I indicated earlier. What we're looking to do now will really to build 16 classrooms amongst our four elementary schools, or four classrooms at each elementary school. That will provide some relief in terms of the existing portables that we have there. And really, you know, our typical classrooms are 750 square feet. They are cylinder block walls, concrete floors, and then a roof. These won't be designed, maybe not to the level of an innovation lab, but something different than what we typically have had as a general classroom before. Of course, we're always looking to provide maximum flexibility and provide a great place for kids to learn in the 21st century. We're looking for this work to begin next summer, so that's why we're bringing these recommendations now. The initial project has been planned for implementation of Lincoln, which would begin spring, very early summer next year. And depending upon how our planning, our permitting, and our application process proceeds, we might look at another building also for next summer, and that building might be Lincoln. The biggest reason for Franklin being considered, first of all, is because a number of years ago, we did a significant underground stormwater detention project there. So that has relieved a lot of the permitting and application that will be required at the other elementaries. We are at the point at every one of our buildings, except at Franklin and Hadley, where every time we touch one of our buildings, there's stormwater implications. All of them are unique and will provide for some significant issues that will need to be addressed. When we did the Hadley project, it was a 15 to 18 month planning and application process. When we did Franklin, the stormwater project there. It was about 18 months also by the time we met with our county partners, our city, and other intergovernmental partners. So it is quite an exercise in permitting an application, and it does take quite some time. So we decided early on that Franklin really was the best school to approach with this recommendation. Again, we will, as we discussed earlier today, the thoughts were that we will plan for additions at all of the elementary schools, sort of in parallel with one another, and then we'll see exactly can we move our timeline up, or do we need to take a step back and plan a little bit differently, or to extend our permitting application process. The designs of these classroom spaces really are driven by the unique needs of the individual buildings. We are in the early stages of determining what exactly that's going to look like. Included in your package for this evening's review, we have very, very initial looks at what the proposed elementary school floor plan would look like, preliminary cost estimates, and a timeline has been developed for project development and construction. The approximate cost is $10.9 million, and that number has now, as I said, gone to $10.9 million because earlier in this planning process, we were only accounting for two additional classrooms at Lincoln because of its unique site plans and so forth. But after several meetings, and the general belief is now that really we need to provide four classrooms in each of the elementary buildings, and so Lincoln will be included. So that's where the number, the total number of 16 classrooms comes up. We're also looking at redesigning the interior or central or core section of Lincoln. I don't know if all of you have been in there, but it does provide its unique circumstances with transitioning and safety and all the other things that are involved with planning for school buildings. As you travel from east to west, the offices are right in the middle of that building. It provides for some rather unique transitioning issues and difficulties. I know myself, I've been in there passing time, and there may be three, four, five, six teachers standing there all kind of trying to direct traffic and who's going to go where and when they're going to move. So that's something also that we've talked about generally, but also that we're going to keep on sort of our master plan of things that we will look at to address over the next couple of years. We've also talked about funding. When we started this conversation, we were looking to spend approximately $7 to $10 million in existing fund balances. That would have given us about 15% of operating funds as a fund balance after that expenditure. We've also met with two of our financial partners. We deal with William Blair, who is a nationally known bond house and who has helped us sell bonds back in 1997, the early 2000s. So we met with those folks. We also met with MB Financial, who is proposing a funding plan for us. So Paul and I met with these folks, and what we're looking to do, if the expenses were to go between a $10 and $14 million figure, we would look at two different funding options, a $5 million and a $7 million funding option, to be financed over 10 to 15 years. These are referred to as debt certificates. That's what William Blair refers to them as. And with MB Financial, they are called direct placement tax exempt bonds. And then again, neither one of these funding options have any implications to a tax levy. They're to be funded out of existing operating funds, in this case, from the operation and maintenance fund. And we'll be looking to fund either a $5 or $7 million plan over 10 to 15 years. Again, no implications to the tax levy. Paul and I will be meeting with these folks a little later this week to get greater clarity in terms of what their recommendations are going to be. And it is our intention at this time to bring each representative back to the Finance Committee. The next time is October 15th. And we'll be bringing a couple things back to the Finance Committee at that time that will be a little greater development in terms of what this is going to look like. Certainly a greater understanding of the time constraints and application permitting process that will be involved. And then also we are going to have these folks come in and give the Finance Committee a presentation in terms of their recommendations. I don't ever want to bring you a recommendation that loses sight of capital projects that we fund annually out of our operation and maintenance fund. This is typically an expenditure of between $1 million and $1.5 million. And for the past couple of years, I keep saying, well, you know, we need to keep thinking about roofs. And that keeps coming back to the table. Well, it's finally hit the table. We don't have any major issues out there, but we still need to do some roofing work, and our recommendation is that we do about $750,000 worth of hard construction or roof replacement next year. The exact locations and buildings has yet to be determined. We'll be studying that over the next couple of weeks, and we'll be bringing you some recommendations on October 15th. Additional information, as I've said, we intend to begin doing this work during 2014, and as the permitting process allows, we might ramp up to do two buildings in 2014, or two or three buildings in 2015. We will look to maintain the consistent process that we use before the Finance Committee and the Board, and that is that we start the initial conversations whenever it has a facility or dollar implication. We start with the Finance Committee. We then move it on to the Board of Education for discussion, and then a meeting later, we look to the Board for action. So that's my presentation for the evening. There's a lot of information included in your packet. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them now. Or if you have any questions, if you'd like me to address through an email or telephone call, I'd be happy to do that also.
Anybody have any questions?
Just one clarification. On the numbers, you're talking about the hard cost numbers.
Hard cost numbers, correct.
Okay, just so everybody understands.
Let me make that perfectly clear. Hard cost construction cost. That does not include the student desk and chairs and so forth. But it will be much as we did over Hadley when we did that addition over there. We're talking hard construction cost.
And then we also have design fees.
All the professional engineering fees also need to be included in that. Those are soft costs and are typically funded through ongoing expenditures through the O&M fund.
Right.
Dean?
Since we have the funds for this now and we have a way to get the funds for this now, this first part of it doesn't take a referendum. But it appears as though, at least the initial feedback we're getting from the community is that they're approving this idea to move forward, getting rid of some of these portables if we can afford to do it. So I think it's important to continue down that path, but it's also important, I think, to remember why we're doing this. And it's, you know, everybody says, well, we've got this problem with portables. I think it hinders what we do from an education point of view with the kids. It hinders logistics. There's a safety concern that's involved in the portables, especially when we get bad weather. So I think it's good to keep that all up front and kind of center and make sure we keep moving towards eliminating as many of these problems as we can.
I agree. And, you know, this will only leave like 8 portables amongst, I think, Churchill and then Lincoln. We'll still have 4 portables each.
And then it doesn't do anything with Hadley yet, though.
Not in this phase.
Right.
That second phase, if we were to move forward with a referendum, then we would be looking at some additional classroom space at Hadley to be able to, I believe they have
10
portables. So we would look to reduce our reliance on portables at Hadley as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Bob, as an elevator speech, newspaper quote, or whatever we want to call it, $11 million to get rid of 26 portables paid for out of existing funds.
16
portables.
I like
16 portables not to come from any taxpayer or community monies.
You're using the low. I mean, if you were making an elevator pitch, if you happen to be in an elevator, the range is 11 to 15. That's just the hard cost. Then you probably need to add another 20-25% for soft costs.
14 to 20.
To say $11 million, I think that's the low end. That doesn't include soft costs and maybe perceived as not.
Okay, so let's make sure the message is clear then.
Yeah.
It's not 11. It's 11 for hard, plus.
So 11 to 15 for hard.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a high and a low. And then, you know, usually soft costs are going to be 20 to 25%. So you could go up to, you know, $19, $20 million on the high.
I think the projection shows 13.6 to 19.15.
13 what?
13.6 to 19.2, roughly.
So,
with the
sun. Okay, so
without the underground retention.
Yeah.
That is correct.
So if you add that in there, then
you're close to 14 to 20, I mean.
Yeah. 14.3.
I just think if we're going to, I mean, if we're at, you know, I don't know where this is going, but if we're going to put something out there, you know, it's got to be what this could be.
Right, right. Let's not undershoot for, yeah, so, okay, so.
And I don't, you know, I don't know if this has, sometimes when estimates are, there's contingency, I don't know if there's contingency.
There are allowances built into all of these cost estimates.
So that's helpful, but.
They're rather simple.
We would certainly want to understand those allowances. It's not always a proven track record of construction projects coming in on budget, at least mine haven't.
Okay, so we vet this pretty hard and heavy in finance, and we were expecting numbers. So, Bob, we're going to these HSBC and MB Financial for $7 million. Are we undershooting here if we're hard and soft for 20?
Well, those are just the projections that Paul and I have discussed, because we did not want to go down to a 15% fund balance. We just thought it more appropriate to still give us some decent reserves to hold on to and provide us with the opportunity of doing some outside funding.
And one of the board members asked us to look at alternative funding.
Right.
That was the purpose, and that was the driving force behind it. And we think it was the right it was the right conversation to have with two institutions that will give the board more flexibility to be able to
make
some decisions.
I'm still unclear on this, though. If we're for going in with 11 as just hard dollars, and that's just to say the low end, and then we're saying, okay, take 11 and split 7 and 7 to get 14 or whatever, why don't we get projections from the financial institutions for the high dollar amount, for the 20? Because we're going to need to pay for that anyways, right?
Here's the I asked the clarification question on the hard cost, and Bob stated that the soft costs are funded
through
via
typically,
okay. So there's
that's
the delineation.
That's the delta that you're missing.
Okay, but that's a pretty high. I mean, the soft costs are higher than we typically have to
that's
be funding
correct.
That out of there. Right?
So that's all the things that we'll need to consider over the next several months as we move forward with these recommendations.
Let's set the stage here for a minute. Right? This is all preliminary,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Preliminary.
And so you've got a lot more to do. I would
absolutely
suspect that those soft costs will not be fully be able to be funded through operational, because they're much higher than they typically are.
But that's our going in stance.
If that's possible, yeah.
That's the recommendation,
right, that's
that
our
they're
going
giving
in
us.
Stance.
Absolutely.
Right. And we need hard cost funding.
And that's that next stage that
yeah.
we're moving toward.
Right. And that hard cost funding on the low end is $11 million.
Yes.
To be funded out of existing reserves.
I'll
hold my judgments on if we need to spend money to buy money, but
I guess, well,
and this is
on your question, right? So you're getting us to 15%, which is probably one of the lower in most of the districts around, I think, from the research that we did previously, which is fine. And I guess the 5 to 7 million being funded out of whatever fund you were talking about. Is that number picked? Did you sort of reverse engineer that and say this is what we could afford over the five to seven million over the 7 to 10 years? You reverse engineered into that number, or could that number be 15 million? And we'd still be able to fund it over the 7 to 10 year period?
I would say this was more a case of also the shifting in our thinking, because we were originally discussing innovation labs, two classrooms in each building, for $7 or $10 million. Now we're looking, shifting our recommendation to reducing our reliance on portables. So that has increased our cost estimates and expectations.
Right. So I understand the costs go up because we went from STEM labs to innovation labs to flexible space to now portables over the course of 2.5 months. But that increase in cost requires more money. But did
correct.
You back in to say, because you're funding this $5 to $7 million out of a fund that we already have today,
correct.
Right? So that budgeted amount can only fund so much. And what I'm asking is that how you got to the 5 to 7, or could that amount fund 10 or 15, or could it only fund 2, and we're going to have to cut some other things?
That's what so I'm that's what we would have to ask with MB and William Blair. They'll have to bring those numbers back to us. Because we had one, we do not know at this point. We had one 20-minute conversation with them to set the stage for them to bring us back the necessary data to say how much
could we fund.
Could we fund if it were a 5-year, if it were a 7-year term? What does that look like?
And we could take this out longer.
Yes,
we could do it for more money.
And those are the pieces that we'll bring back to you to be able to continue having these conversations.
But I think to your question, John, he did reverse engineer. He did a combination of basically 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
50 from bond and 50 from the education.
Which is so fine if our balance in that bucket that he wants to fund the bond at can be paid
through that,
or if that has to increase.
Yeah, well, it depends on the maturity and the interest rate and all that good stuff. So those numbers are basically we can fund more out of the education fund if we want to. That was discussed. Or we can lower it and save some of that education funding for the balance or something else. Or the bonding can be variable based on how much you need, what term you choose, and what the interest rate of that term is. And I think there's different scenarios that can bond for more than what is in this proposal.
Absolutely.
And that's the important thing. So it's a combination. I think what I asked for when I asked for this is it's good to get a variety of funding sources so that you can vet them. So you know what constraints you have. What constraints are you going to add to the future by having certain funding sources? By doing a combination, by doing all one, by making all bonds, making all your education fund. And that is good for us as a board to say, hey, here's what we're looking at. Now what constraints are we going to put on the future by doing this funding this way? The more variety we have, the more we can make the right choice.
Yep, and for me to end up, you know, finally voting on this, I'm going to want to understand how much of that is being funded through whatever bucket he's thinking of.
Right.
And I want to know how much that will increase from today's funding or not, so that we understand what the implication is. Because I know we keep saying without impacting the levy, but at some point, if it's a larger sum than what we have budgeted, it's going to impact something. Something's going to have to get.
Well, you are paying down bonds now. Okay, so you do have a retirement of existing bonds.
Yeah, that's another 4 years away.
Yeah, but it's still a retirement, and you can amortize these things differently. So, depending on.
But even that, just so we understand, if those bonds are retired, and I didn't renew them, I would be saving money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So just because I extend them doesn't mean that
you can choose to spend them.
That doesn't mean that I'm not increasing anything. I'm increasing my debt, which.
No, I don't know that I'd follow you 100%, but I know this, that when those retire, you're going to have funds to spend somewhere on programs, on facilities, and you have to make a choice, a priority choice, as we talked about all the time. What is our priority? So if there's funds available for those priorities, then we as a board vote to do that or not. When those bonds are retired, yes, there's an excess in the funds for us to make program choices, facility choices, and I think that's what we're doing
financial
here.
Financial choices.
Financial mm-hmm. choices. We're going to make financial choices about facilities.
We also have financial choices about the levy as well. With that extra money, I mean, you
could do what we did 2 years ago and rebate it.
Yeah.
And that's a choice.
Right.
So
there's going to be a construction timeline and there's going to be a financial timeline. So I think in the finance committee, we just said, you know, those guys need to be locked and loaded when they come because there's going to be a lot of questions mm-hmm. from this board. About those
you might want to extend that meeting now that it's been shortened.
I'm trying.
Okay. I have a question, Bob. And this, and I think John alluded to this, but my question to you is, as we've talked about this, and Paul alluded to the fact that I sent some questions, and a lot of it is around funding, but so there's the finance committee meeting, and we have good, smart people on that finance committee. The other piece of this conversation are the decisions and the priorities that this board needs to make around some of the other things we've been talking about. Will there kindergartens out there, programmatic choices, you know, that will impact. And my question is, because we talk a lot about the fund balance, you said that this would still provide us a bad fund balance of approximately 15%. What's your opinion about that? I think I know your answer. Yeah, because when we had, when we debated the dollars, that was a big decision that this board made. And I know that you recommended to do 50% of that abatement, or a little less than 50%, and do a phase potentially too. So,
I'll
leave it at that. I mean, but I think that's something that we need to talk
because
about.
Because the next time we're going to meet as a board is when these recommendations come in and we're looking at 50. Why were we nervous about 15%? I wasn't here.
You're right, and that was a conversation that took place 2 or 3 years ago. You know, I'm a finance person whose beliefs are in fiscal conservatism. So that's just the way I always look at things. It's just to be a little more fiscally conservative. We had a fund balance a couple of years ago of about 30 or 33%. That makes, you know, my life and my decision, or our decisions, a lot easier to make. It provides a certain degree of comfort in terms of the recommendations that we're making.
Yeah.
When you get down to 15%, well, then you've got to be a little more cautious in the recommendations that you're bringing to the board.
But that's okay, right? I mean, that just puts
it's
a little...
It's our decision. Yeah. But it's less than what the board has identified as policy. Yeah,
our
protocol,
policy.
Right?
Right.
Which would be 5%. About 2 years ago.
It was abated 3 years ago and paid off 2 years ago.
No. But I mean, I thought we put some parameters around.
We did
fund balance
about 4 years ago, 3 years ago. We gave a board policy states that recommendations should not come that reduce fund balances less than 25% of the following year's, the next fiscal year's operating expenditure. Now that would be exclusive of capital expenditures, but operating.
But that policy, I believe, also is that we wouldn't do that without discussing it.
Absolutely.
So it didn't say we wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It just said, hey, if we're going to do that, we should discuss it.
There'll be a conversation around it.
Because,
I didn't want this to get lost in the middle of this report because we have a lot of conversation. This board, over the last 5-6 years, has become much more focused on our levy conversation and what was it this year? We had a surplus of $22,000.
The difference between what we levied and what we expected.
Right. So every year we've improved our decision making around what to levy, still keeping within that 5% so that we're not losing those dollars either and handcuffing future boards. We don't want to do that either. That's just the part of the law. You know, it doesn't always make sense, but it is what it is. So I didn't want this to get buried in the middle of the report. That's the only reason we brought it up. We'll talk further about it.
Okay, can I just add one more concept to that?
Yeah,
before you go to your next topic. So because you're new here.
I can really use that so long.
Right. I mean, the fundamental question that you have is what's the risk? You put money aside for risk of making payments and not having money in the future. And you have to ask yourself, what's the risk of not getting your revenues? And in this business, I would assume they fairly low at the local level and get higher with state and federal level.
Right.
And then that allows you to say, okay, so how much money do I really need given there's a lower risk at the local level and a higher risk at the state and the highest at the federal level? And when you look at those numbers, that's when you ask, do I feel as my business can be an ongoing concern with that level of risk that I put in?
Yeah. Again, all these conversations will happen in the finance committee and at the board when we have these discussions. I just, going to 15% will create extremely prudent conversations that need to happen at the board. I'm okay and I'm comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. I'd rather self-fund, and then should we ever have to go to that instance where we need to go fund something, I'd rather defer. We're getting way ahead of the conversation, but I'd rather not borrow now. And if the opportunity to borrow, because you guys have uncovered this borrowing tactic, let's use that when we need it. But those are conversations that we'll have at finance and when it gets conversations and the numbers. But
and it's the cost of borrowing.
That's what I'm concerned about. The cost of borrowing, not only financially, but like is what we said. what kind of pressures does it put on the future, but we got to get something done.
And maybe bring this full circle real quick. Where we started the conversation was you pointed us towards the portables in the years that they came in. So when we look at these portables, some of these portables came in 2002.
Correct.
These are a temporary solution for our overcrowding.
That's what they were designed.
These are now 11 years old, some of them.
They were used when they got them.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't
and,
buy them.
And the state of Illinois says you can't use portables as a permanent solution.
That is correct.
I think this district is using portables as a permanent solution. And this is the time when you look at those fund balances and say, this is why we saved the money. This is the exact sort of thing, besides the ones that John pointed out, which are very important about not getting your revenues, but this is the exact sort of thing that says, look, we have to solve this problem because it keeps getting kicked down the road. And we're not fixing this problem. So
I don't disagree with anything Dean said. There's two other pieces of this that I put in my note to follow to Bob. I want to be clear in our discussions around this, because they have been ongoing for lots and lots of years, that we all still agree that programs drive facilities. And one of the things that the board's talked about in the past, and we've talked about a little bit as a new board, is not just throwing on rooms because it's going to provide a solution. So I was glad to hear you say that while, you know, we have these cinder block rooms, what we're designing are spaces that will have the flexibility that we need to have. They're in my opinion, and from what we've been learning as a board over the last few years, no turning back on the kind of teaching that needs to happen, the style of teaching, the approach, the facilitative style, problem-based learning, all those things, because that's what is required for the kind of academic rigor that we have. So, and I know I sent in my note too, that once we see the renderings and all that, that will make me feel better. I don't want this to be a Lego solution.
It absolutely will not be. As stated, it may not have the shock and awe of an innovation lab, but it is still going to be a wonderful learning space.
Yeah.
A wonderful, flexible learning space that allows.
I don't need shock and awe, but I don't want to walk in and have it be.
It looked like a current classroom.
Then everything that we've talked about in our long range plan, our learner characteristics, all those things become. An afterthought. So I'll just put that on the table.
I appreciate it.
The other thing is...
Can I add to that one before you go to the next one, or do you want to wait?
Is it about what I just said?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I agree with you that, and I know that Bob said the words, and I think what I'm going to want to see is what is flexible mean in these classrooms.
Right.
So that should be defined for us, right? And what is the 21st century dynamic of these classrooms? So at one point we had come up with... I wouldn't say a vision, but there was a start at what that might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And in the drawings that I see right now, I don't see that. So
yeah,
obviously we're still in the initial stages. But, certainly we had classrooms that had some, MIP space in it. If a teacher needed to bring a kid out a little bit, or we wanted a kid to be in that classroom but knew we had to bring them out a little bit in a little quieter area in the room, that was a possibility. I know we're putting four rooms here. Curriculum-wise, I've always felt that our fifth graders have gotten cheated a little bit in terms of some of the things they could have in terms of labs and science. So I don't know why we can't have a four-pack here with either STEM lab, flexible space, or innovation lab in it, so that we fix the problem in the building, which is that they don't have that capability today. So that's probably some of the emails you're going to get from me, is why don't we look at, making this what it could be for some of that. Now, it'll cost more, and we'll understand the difference, and we can make that decision, but I don't see why we couldn't have a fifth room here that's a STEM lab, and a room here that allows for a little more quiet time for those kids that need it, and address some of the other issues. I know on the Ben Franklin one, and I don't know if this is true or not, but, if the gym's a problem there and we're tacking the rooms on to the gym, maybe it's, we address the gym and the four classrooms. But, something like that we can have options to look at to determine maybe we borrow $7 million instead of $5 million, and it addresses a lot of the infrastructure problems that we may have in a building, because my sense is at least over the next 5 to 7 years, these buildings will be 600 kids. So
that's why we need phase two.
Yeah.
That's why we need a phase two.
Right. Well, that's but when you look at the timeline here, phase two would be for at least 3 or 4 years, and then that'll take a couple of years. So, you know. So anyway, that's just some things that you know that I think we should challenge our guys to see what that incremental cost would be.
Right. And what I said to Paul was, well, we get the. I know I trust FGM that they have heard us year on year, meeting after meeting, that we're not looking for a plug-in. And while I see this as a little bit of a pivot, I don't want us to lose sight of the initial intention, which was to do, John, I'm glad you agree with me, there to be the opportunity for this flexibility and for teachers to have that flexibility in the space. That's the, you know, the goal of building the facilities. One of the things we haven't talked about is the cost of the portables, and I know there's a cost to certainly degrade them, to take them down, but there's also a cost to the leasing, and I can't put my fingers on it, but we have a nice inspection on the website, the cost out of, you know, what each...
We pay about $140,000 annually.
Correct. Right. And roughly $190,000 in lease and maintenance of those. So with the number of the portables that we own, that should be, you know, taken offline. We would have to either be increasing the lease options on more or purchasing more portables. So that number will only continue
right,
to increase. The older they get, that number will continue to increase. And that's a lot of money that we've spent over a number of years so far.
So part of this analysis should be, and that's what I jotted down, the savings that we're going to get from eliminating.
It'll all be part of the equation.
It will be.
Because that's, just so everybody understands, that's not in these budget numbers. These are just hard and soft costs to build the emissions.
But what comes out?
Those are some of the capital budgeting type figures I'd
like
to see. Data points that I want to see.
And a new classroom's maintenance is a lot lower in the initial years. Clearly, as the building gets older, there are things needed, but the initial years is very small. It's minimal.
Correct.
Big choice.
Bob, I understand what you're saying about Franklin, and I know I made this point before, but even in our last census, which was at the September 3rd meeting, there's Churchill is just our, you know, 650 students is the infrastructure that school has really felt it the most. But I do understand what you're saying about timelines, and if we can jumpstart the program with Franklin because permitting will be easier. I'm wondering what kind of pre-work we could do with the village and with well, Churchill's only in Glen Allen, right? Or is part of it
we would go to Glen Allen.
Just Glen Allen, the village,
yeah,
right?
All the schools we start, even Hadley,
yeah,
we start with Glen Allen and
right,
then for simplification we
and then the city of Wheaton comes in. So, you know, I'm wondering if there can be some intergovernmental, you know, I know we work well with Stacy and, you know, we have a good relationship.
Let's say it's underway.
Yeah.
But to Erica, to your point, though, and Bob, I think we brought it up at finance, we're going in with all of it and then peel away as it
as we can get to the number that you are very comfortable working with.
Yeah, we want to do all of them next year if we can, but then we're just going to start peeling away, okay, this one can't be done for timelines or this one can't be done for...
That's our intention.
That's our intention, and we're going to get to a plan, but we want to go all in.
Person. It's all coming together now.
Yeah. Thank you. Sounds like we all need to read the finance packet really well over
there. Any other questions, comments?
And thank you for the roof information.
Absolutely. FGM contract renewal. We spoke about it at the last board meeting. It is to you for discussion.
Anyone?
These were the amendments, right, to projects?
Correct. 24 through 28.
Right.
I think one thing I, in the finance committee, I pointed out when we were discussing this was something I would, I mean, Ron's great, we've been working with him for a long time, but I think it's important to always stay on top of who else is out there, talk to people, get an understanding. They may come forward with some ideas. I'm not saying do full interviews, but make sure we're informing ourselves as a district, or who else is out there, what work are they doing? I know in reading the construction managers packages, there was a lot of other firms that are used by districts. Get some feedback from those districts. Just always making whoever we're using on top of their game by letting them know that we're doing interviews and we're testing the waters, and at least from a conversational standpoint. I think that's always prudent business.
Appreciate it.
And we do build in, I think you know this, Joe, but just for the record, you know, we built in an annual evaluation where there's a grading or rating of those professional services, so that, you know, prompts that conversation too.
Any other conversation? Okay. The next item is amendment to the Glenbard Area Property Tax Appeals Consortium. This is searching for the board's perspective on allowing District 93 to join 41, 87, and 89 to reduce costs associated with property tax appeals. It really is, are you comfortable with 93 joining us?
It's only a good thing to have more voices.
Like, yes. Yeah, and Bob supports us. And
yeah. We've talked about this before.
Yep.
Yeah. So no concerns?
No concerns, because we've talked about it.
Correct.
Several times.
Correct.
Yeah. And have added people in the past.
We have. Okay. Back over to you.
All right. Upcoming meetings. Is that where we're at here?
Yes, we are.
All right. Terrific. Following the script. October 15, 2013, regular meeting at 7 p.m. at Central Services Office, which is this building here. October 28, 2013, Board of Education regular meeting, 7 p.m. right here as well at the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters that anyone would like to consider or discuss at this point?
There's one that I would like to talk about, and that has to do with, you know, in our packets since July, maybe, or maybe around there, we've been getting breakdowns of the FOIA requests. And so the FOIA requests are from the Freedom of Information Act, and it's a very good act that allows people from the community to get questions answered and to ask for detail. And we have seen an awful lot of increase in this request area, and we've been tracking the hours on it, it looks like, in our reports. And just really quickly adding it up, it looks like it might be 30 hours over the last 2 months that we've spent of administrative time responding to these FOIA requests. And what I want to point out is not only is there 30 hours of doing this, and so that everybody understands, you get the request, you have to go find the documents, you take the documents, you make copies of them, then you have to blacken out areas you're not allowed to put in there, redacting, I guess is what it's called. Then you have to make another copy of it because you could see it through that if you didn't do that, and then you take all of that information and put it in a packet and send it somewhere. The other part that's not in all these hours we've been spending on this is then you need to stack all that stuff, keep it there till we're all done with this review, and then you got to pay somebody now to put it all back. So I hope that people understand that when we're looking at things, we want to make sure that, you know, we respond to these well, and I'm hoping that it's not becoming a nuisance where we're just going to have a new line item in our budget for FOIA requests. From what I've seen so far, and I should be corrected if I'm incorrect on this, I believe all of these requests, we might have differences of opinion on what some of the money is spent on from time to time, but I don't believe there's anything that's come out of all the FOIA requests that give us pause or concern that there's a problem in the district so far. And I want to know if everybody else kind of agrees with that too, so that we can make sure we understand what all these requests are from.
And I think it's good information for us to have, which we haven't in the past. Same thing with our surplus report, you know, disposal of property, any of those kind of reports that seem kind of ancillary but do, you know, impact. So, yeah.
Just one item, and I'll address it with Mr. Cooper as well. He and I did speak in person on the issue he raised this evening around the hotel. I spoke to him. I've addressed that issue with him. He believes that it was a violation. I believe it was a difference in an opinion of spending. But I will address the issue one more time. I'll try to close it out for the board members because that's one of the pieces that we have put in our opening public participation is that one of the staff members will address it with the community. So I'll take that responsibility and leave and address that again.
So you're taking the hotel, who's taking the MasterCard? That was the other one that was brought up.
Not right. Being brought. Well, we haven't put them out there since maybe.
Yeah, sure. Bob, we will make sure that. Bob, the posting of the.
Already on my notes.
Thank you, sir. Right. Thank you for doing that.
And then the third one was the. I was going to do this at the end, but the third one was around the portables. Did we?
I think I addressed that piece that you guys are talking about for the next 3, 4, 5 weeks. Triple I. We absolutely can. The Triple I conference is.
So I'm sorry, but.
Yeah.
So your position is all three of those that he brought up are closed.
From my perspective,
okay.
I think we're addressing. Mr. Cicerella is addressing the P cards. Those will be posted. I'm not sure exactly when, but we will have those addressed.
But someone's assigned each one.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Any other matters that we would like to bring up?
We were going to discuss just, I think, briefly Triple I. I think that everybody's going to participate probably in Triple I this year.
I will not be participating.
You won't be? Okay. But the other board members are. And what we'll have to decide is how we're going to handle that.
Yeah, I know this has come up a couple times in terms of cost, and I asked Bob last week, and thank you for getting this report to me, to look just at the Board of Education budget. So in 2011-2012, the board budget was $9,500 total. That's a .00016 of our budget or less, a small number. We lowered that budget actually in 2012-13 to $7,500. Again, this year it's $7,500, so we reduced it by a couple thousand in 2011-2012. What's on here are all costs. It's the DuPage fall and winter, spring and winter dinners that those of us who are interested attend. There's training on here that Sam did, and open meetings. They have training for any of us that took it that didn't take it online. Everything that's on here, as I reviewed it, has been affiliated. Out of the board budget also comes our board self-evaluation when we hire the IASB rep to come in and facilitate for us. And in addition to this is the cost for the conference. So the question was put to us, how do we want to handle that?
Who put that question to us?
Paul did, actually, 2 weeks ago. He asked, started thinking about, who's going, and the question's been posed by a community member or more community members, the cost of dinner and also hotel, the cost to go to the conference.
Registration,
the
hotel, stay for an evening.
So my point is we budget $7,500. Last year we had, $626.88 left over from our budget. The year before, we had $1,833 left over, which is why we reduced it by $2,500. So I would offer to the board members, and new board members especially, that it's certainly not a huge line item. And it's not one that board members take advantage of. I think the Triple I conference is really important. A couple years ago, or last year, the Daily Herald did a report on spending, and there were some, what I would agree were both silly, but also some egregious spending by board members of other districts. And that's not the case for this district. But a comment was made by one board member that I thought was important. It was, the cost of board members to not be informed or not be educated is a much greater cost than the dollars that you spend out of your budget to do this. So I think it's important that we go. I'm certainly comfortable with one hotel night so that we can be ready that Friday night, have our time together as a board. I think that's really critical as a team opportunity for us. We tend to meet mostly in business meeting or workshop, and that's important as a group event. And then we always have an 8 o'clock meeting on Saturday morning for Lund that kicks off the rest of the day for us where we get together. So I think one night is fair. What I would suggest is that if we invite spouses, which we have done over the past few years, that we pay for our spouse's dinner. And I'm not uncomfortable with that, and we use some of the dollars for dinner for us. So that's my opinion. I don't think our budget is used inappropriately, and I just think it's really important for the board to have this kind of learning.
I didn't know that. We have $7,500 for the year attributed for the board.
For the board learning and growth.
So, okay. And that's where these funds come from.
Yeah, so some of that money, when I first became a board member, I took 2 days. I used a vacation day on a Friday, and that's my cost. And I, went all day, about 8 or 9 hours on Friday, and about the same on Saturday. And I was lucky that the location was here in Glen Ellen, so I took advantage of it to do that. And spent 16 hours in board training to get up to speed on some of the things that were required of. That's what this conference is about, is to get the type of training. This is not some sort of Vegas go-crazy conference. There's a lot of work that goes on in these conferences, and if you don't do it, we have to end up figuring, well, if you have to do some of that, because it's required by law to get the training. But if we don't do this training, we have to find other times to do it, and we'll end up doing it separately anyway then. So I think what we do, it sounds like from a traditional point of view,
and just to reiterate,
divide up the agenda.
The mandatory trainings are all being offered at the III conference,
right?
Which is
right.
Important. So I just wanted to.
Yeah, that's an excellent
cost savings.
Some of the trainings that we're required to take by the state of Illinois
are
at the conference.
Well, and I don't go to the conference, but conferences that you do go to, oftentimes the value is in after the conference and talking to people and
other
getting their ideas. So
yeah.
It's not like if it ends at 6, you leave. And I mean, that's not an effective way to use a conference, at least in my opinion, the ones I've been to.
And it's the board governance work. It's certainly all of the delegation work needed. And that's, I think, the other thing, John, you brought this up. And, as a board, I don't know that we talk about this as well as we should, or as effectively as we should. And that is that it's school administrators, school business officials, and school board members. And so often the learning, at least in my experience, has been where I've had questions around why X in terms of school business issues, and not something else, is answered in a common educational session, mm-hmm. one that you choose to go to. So it, I've never felt it to be a misuse of our, board budget.
I guess I want to say that I don't think anybody's saying the conference isn't a good idea, and there's a lot of good stuff there, and we're all going to learn things if we go. I think the point is, is $7,500 for the year for board training, board expense, is it an egregious spend of money? $7,500. We can talk about it's good, we're going to learn stuff, we're going to go to board meetings, blah, 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 blah. I can tell that to a community member, but I also can tell the community member of the total administration budget, $7,500 goes to the school board for training and other ancillary issues. I'm comfortable with $7,500 of the total budget being allocated to the school board for training. If we go to this ISA
AAA,
or we go, to Lombard, or we go to another class, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is. We're going to learn.
Correct.
I'm more comfortable saying, $7,500 for the board administration out of the entire budget, I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't see that we would discuss every little thing we're going to go spend like this. I mean, we have a budget and.
Right. And the reason we're discussing
it's been questioned, and so I thought it was important tonight to.
It's questioned, and that's why I'm saying let's answer the question. The question is, can you justify spending money to go to this conference? Well, we can justify going to conferences because it's learning and it's, camaraderie, and we're going to talk to other district managers and finance, and I'm going to learn some things. But the question isn't, is it useful? The question is, is it appropriate use of funds? For school board funds, let's answer the question, and I think the answer is we think $7,500 of administrative funds is prudent use of monies for the school board. Regardless if we go to Chicago, if we go to Naperville, if we go to Wheaton, that's our budget. That's what we voted on. If it's spent, all in on this conference in November, and it takes up $5,000, fine. But $7,500 of the budget. we feel as an administration it's good money to spend of the entire $50 million budget of it.
I guess that begs the question, though, are we using that $7,500 the most efficient way? And that's the question to your state. And this conference certainly seems like, the conference cost certainly seems like it's things go to us in the city of Chicago. We live close to the city of Chicago. So and we do have to take off a day of work, vacation day, right before the holidays, which isn't often easy to do because you're taking other ones off. So there is a major sacrifice by the people on the board to do that. And some may not be able to do it based on their workload, and that should be recognized. But I don't think the question is about the conference, you know, the cost of the conference. I think the question comes to the points that Erica brought up. The other things you benefit from all being together, going to dinner, going to breakfast, part of that is if you're going to do both those events, it's hard to do if you're commuting on the train, you know, with a weekend pass of $7 for a round trip, you know. So I think that's the heart of the question here.
What's just your point about that there's an agenda. The agenda are the classes, but it's the things that happen outside the agenda where you can have conversations with other school board members, other administrators, different places. You cut that short if you got to go catch a train, get home, go back in the morning, be there by 8 again. You're going to lose some valuable hours you can spend with those other board members and other people in different administrations to get some questions answered and have some good discussions. So that's why we're suggesting that we do it like you said. And I am absolutely, as far as the meals go and paying for our spouses, I have no idea if my spouse didn't be able to go, but I certainly would pay for
it. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
And for me, I love to agree with everybody, but for me, the meals, I'm eating anyways, So to me, I want to eat at dinner with you guys, get to know everybody better. I mean, it's a great tool. It sounds like a great conference, and people have gone to it. Mm-hmm. Said how good it's been. I need to learn more. I'm a new board member, so I'm all for that. I just, for me, I'll agree with what you guys, what the consensus is. But at the end of the day, I agree with John. The workshops are important. You're going to meet people in the workshops. You're going to have breakout meetings. You don't want to have to, like Dean said, I got to catch the 6:20. Or the 6:40, whatever it is.
It's a commitment to the weekend is what
it is. And it's a commitment away from your family. It's a commitment away from your work. So it is a big commitment from the board members. I mean, foregoing a day, I guess one would argue foregoing a day of work and losing a vacation day is well worth one cost of dinner.
Right.
I mean, that's for sure. I can understand that. But at the end of the day, I'm cognizant that people are worried about what we spend and how we spend it. And $7,500 can be spent differently, so efficiently, effectively. Get your bang for your buck, as we like to say. So, to me, I think as far as staying overnight, it sounds like a must because of the critical things happening in the evening and in the morning. I don't think you want to send anybody home late at night after a conference and then have to worry about that either. There's risk associated with that. So I think it's prudent for me. I'm fine on the meals. I agree with Erica and Dean. Spouse so that we can pay for my own dinner. Personally, I don't mind paying for my own dinner, that's just where I sit because I'm going to eat anyways.
Any other comments then, or are we done with this discussion? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
So I'm wondering what you need, if anything, from us for registration. I think
we're good.
All good, right?
Yes, we are good, other than, specific, like, when you
So you'll send out an email and we'll... Okay. Any other matters anybody would like to bring up? Okay. Back to public participation. Is there anyone present who would like to address the board?
It was 4 weeks ago tonight that I got up and talked about the events surrounding the closing of the Lincoln East Portable. I demanded that the Lincoln parents know what happened. What followed during that meeting was a 12-minute conversation that included a timeline of events, how we are utilizing that space, and many promises to keep us informed of the progress of the remediation. To date, we have received one email, and that was the day after the meeting. We deserve better communication than that. you'll gain a lot more trust from us by following through on what you say. And I know this next part is sort of touched on facilities, but I'll still bring it up. Also, during that meeting, I gave my own rough outline for eliminating all the portables at the elementary schools. And over the course of the last week or so, I felt encouraged that the administration was listening and starting to move in the right direction. Then I started reading the supporting materials in tonight's agenda. And I really have to wonder if the left hand here has kept in touch with the right hand over here. As an example, a lot of talk is centered on reconstructing the front office area of Lincoln to improve traffic flow. And yet the drawing made available in this packet shows that doesn't happen. That the west side portable can be relocated to the east side, while four rooms can be added on the newly found land on the west side. And without seeing here at this next unit really doesn't make much sense, but I hope that the three current or former Lincoln parents on the board can figure this out better than I can, because I can see two more rooms can be built in that west side area. And who knows how much could be gained from redoing the fronts. My point is, we do not want portable classrooms anymore. I'll admit, I don't know the difficulty and challenges at Churchill to eliminate portables, but it seems to me like it can be a reality at Lincoln. Let's make sure that the right hand knows what the left hand is requesting and can follow through on it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to address the board? Okay. Thank you. Are we going to close session, or do you guys work
all night? We worked it all out.
Man, you guys aren't tired?
You look exhausted all night. You've been yawning.
All right, then. May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Second. All answering say nay. I guess that's afterwards. We're good. Roll call?
Roll call.
Not necessary?
Fine.
All right, we're good. Thank you, everyone.
All in favor.
Pleasure seeing everyone.
All right.
Have a wonderful evening.
Bye.